This episode is sponsored by ABI Interiors, an Australian-designed fixtures supplier specialising in high-quality kitchen and bathroom products for the modern home. ABI Interiors will turn your dream home into reality with a timeless product range that includes stylish tapware, basins, sinks, baths and showers in up to 7 signature finishes. You can visit the ABI Interior Showroom at Design Centre Chelsea Harbour or shop online at abiinteriors.co.uk.
All these craft people are tied together by this like insane, passionate obsession for what they do that is so contagious. And everything is fascinating, you know, like the materials are fascinating, the processes are fascinating, the degree of passionate intensity with which they, you know, go at it.
Welcome to a new series of House Guest with me, Carol Annett, interiors editor of Country and Townhouse magazine. Artemis is the goddess of the hunt in Greek mythology. A perfect way to describe my house guest today, Ippolita Rostano, who seeks out Italian artisans for interior designers. I caught up with her at the Pelham Hotel in South Kensington. Today I am meeting Ippolita Rostano. Ippolita, you say that because you're going to say it much more beautifully than me.
Ippolita Rostano.
Ippolita Rostano.
There you go.
And originally from Florence, Ippolita is an entrepreneur, a businesswoman, and our paths crossed through a company you founded called Artemest, which is an online marketplace for handmade contemporary Italian design. But you have so many more strings to your bow, not least as a jewelry designer. But let's start with Artemest. Tell us a little bit about the background.
So, as you said, I am from Florence, and Florence is the seat of the Renaissance, and very, very much ingrained in the culture of the city is stewardship of craft and art. And so when I grew up, it was a very formative experience in a way that's hard to describe from the outside, because you just live it in this sort of subconscious contract that the Florentines have about preservation of everything beautiful and everything crafted, and this very profound understanding that beauty matters and it's at the center of the human experience. And this is reflected in the buildings, it's reflected in the pavements, it's reflected in the whole city, sort of emanates a version of this story. And so I moved to the United States when I was 20 and then went on to be a jewelry designer. My craft background is in sculpture. So in any case, then over the years, I was going back and forth constantly to Italy. And I started to sort of to witness the disappearance of all these craft people. And in Florence, it was particularly visible because there were so many craft shops like at street level. And I grew up with this experience of theater, you know, like real life theater going on. Like you could stand in the window of a craftsman and really watch them do a project from start to finish. And it was so beautiful, basically, to watch. And when they started to disappear, I would ask my friends, like, what's going on? You know, have you noticed that, you know, all these people are closing or what's going on? And they somehow were not taking it as seriously as I thought it needed to be addressed. You know, it's like, oh my God, because if these people disappear, there's no way to, you know, bring them back. Because, you know, anyway, and so I started actually studying the problem, and I was like, what is actually going on here? And of course, the internet happened. It changed commerce, you know, forever. And these people whose livelihoods were on a completely different sort of time track were completely disconnected from the world. And so therefore, I decided, okay, in the meantime, I had been in the luxury business, you know, for 20 years, you know, with my jewelry business. And every day of my life, people say, oh, you're in Italy, you're Italian. I love love Italy. Italy's wonderful. Italy's amazing. And so I was like, it makes no sense how there is a consumer base that is extremely sensitive to this idea that beauty matters and that craft has value. And then here are all the craftsmen who are the keepers of this heritage that are completely disconnected. And so therefore I thought, okay, I'm going to build a bridge. I'm going to create a virtual space in which we will tell their story, introduce them and their craft, and, you know, hopefully kickstart a new renaissance.
Fantastic. And it sounds so logical and simple.
it seems so obvious now. Yeah. when you look at the website now, it's like, of course, you know, it doesn't seem, but, you know, at the time, you know, at this point, it's almost 10 years ago we started. Of course, there was no website. And so I would have to go recruit the artisans. And, you know, and I was like, imagine, you know, we will be selling your beautiful products. And they were so computer illiterate that it was a real stretch, you know, for them to say, wait, who is going to buy my beautiful, incredible handmade thing, you know, on the other side of the ocean? It was a real disconnect for them, but it's been a journey.
And so you joined forces with Marco Credendino, and it's the two of you who launched Artemis.
Yes, yes. So we had, I had met him, he was studying at Bocconi, and one of the previous incarnations of this effort was to really educate people in the business world that craft is relevant and that done properly, you know, there is a way of bringing the old and the new together and forward into the world in a profitable way. And so this was not a conversation for art schools. It was a conversation for business schools. And so that's where we met. And then, you know, I convinced him to come in with me on this adventure.
So you have an impressive roster of companies. So about 25% that are 100 years old, 50% that are 70 years plus, and then the rest is next generation. Was that have I got that right? And secondly, was that a very kind of focused decision on how it should be, the mix of artisans?
Well, mostly actually, I was concerned that it be very inclusive geographically.
Right.
Because craft is extremely local. And so I didn't want it to be only Venice and Florence. I wanted it to be all of Italy because there are so many crafts that are in the South that people have never heard of that are very tied to the local, you know, materials. And so I wanted to tell that cultural story as well. Craft businesses are traditionally passed in the family, you know, from father to son, you know, for generations. So it wasn't a conscious effort to say, let's pick everyone that has a old and venerable business. It's just the nature of those businesses. And so therefore, it was more, I think, interesting for me to look at it geographically.
And I mean, you have such a wide range of lovely, beautiful objects, from furniture to glass, lighting. How do you decide what you're going to take?
The craftsmanship and the beauty of the products is the first, you know, level of, because of course, like everywhere, not all crafts are worth preserving. And it's a huge investment on our part to really make sure that their stories are told properly, to present their product, to help them evolve their product, you know, and so therefore, there is a lot of work on our part that goes into it. So it has to be something that we feel is worth investing in.
Can you remember one or two of the first makers that you brought on board, and are they still with you?
Yes, yes. We still have the first little handful.
Tell us about some of those.
Okay, so for example, Moleria Locchi, which is a crystal engraver in Florence. It's a hilarious family business because...
I don't know whether you're saying that kind of tongue-in-cheek or sort of slightly exasperating.
Yes, 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 both. You know, like all family businesses, you know, there's sort of a mixture of like the family dynamic mixed in with the product evolution. And so they're working, they're engraving these freehand wild designs of country scenes and little dogs and little, it's so delightful and so from a different century. You know, here in England, I think that you have appreciation for those things, probably more so. You're more sensitive than in other places. But it's just so amazing to me that you can have, that these crafts have survived, you know, and that somebody would appreciate this like extremely ethereal product, and that these people feel like this is worth dedicating their lives to, you know, like really creating something that is so ephemeral and so beautiful and so delightful, you know, and thinking that the experience of drinking in these glasses that are so beautifully made every day of your life, you know, while you're having a quick lunch is, you know, worth pursuing. So that was one. And then Ninchoni is another one. He's a wood engraver, and he makes these beautiful frames that are inspired by the Tondodoni.
What's the Tondodoni?
It's a frame of a Michelangelo, of a very famous Michelangelo painting. And he got the Uffizi, he convinced the Uffizi to let him go there and make clay replicas.
Oh my gosh.
You know, on the day that the museum was closed. So wow. He would go on Mondays and do these clay replicas and then go back home. And, you know, and it's these crazy things that you're thinking, why did you do this? You know, like it's, you know, it took 10 years, you know, to make these replicas. And then he had to reproduce them, you know, in wood. And he's just like, well, because it's worth doing, you know. Isn't it wonderful? And you're like, yeah, it's wonderful. You know, there goes 10 years of your life, you know, for just the experience of doing it and of sharing it. And so it's these stories, you know, that you just feel like you can't not tell these stories. You can't let this go to waste, you know. And so the challenge then becomes, how do these become products that people can bring into their homes today?
Yeah.
You know, and how can you help them evolve sort of the stylistic relevance of these products and of these techniques?
So do you shoot the products yourself, or how does it work on the website?
It's a combination. We sort of start from the premise that the artisans know how to do the product, end of story.
Yeah.
You know, and then
you do what you do well and just do that, and we'll do the rest.
Right, exactly. Because really that was the problem we were solving for. And so interestingly though, when I started literally going door to door, you know, from north to south, trying to assess the, you know, what the situation was, I thought that I was going to recruit exclusively like tiny artisans. And then it turned out that in fact, people with larger production capabilities had similar needs. And so we thought, oh, this can be a much more inclusive community and therefore cater to many more needs of the home decor industry than we anticipated.
And you've become a real, very much a trusted go-to for designers and architects. How did you build that reputation?
Customer service, like truly understanding the needs of the industry and being there to help solve them. I mean, everybody, especially in the design community, who loves Italian products and loves working with and has had experience, you know, it's usually been very painful. Like, oh, I love working with Italian artisans, but, you know, they can't, basically what they're saying is they can't deal with any of the logistics. You know, they can't ship, they can't pack, they can't deliver on time. They don't know how to manage their communication, their time. And so those are all the things that we solve for. And so we have a very robust customer service department in Milano that really, on the side of the designer, it's as simple as ordering something. And many, many, many things that we do are bespoke because they're making it anyway. So, you know, whether they make it a little bigger, a little smaller, or a different color is usually, you know, in a day's work. But of course, on the back end of that is all this work that we have to do to actually execute that and make sure that they're executing, that they're doing it on time, that they are sending us photographs of the products as they are being developed to make sure that it's being done properly. And
So you also, it's quality control as well.
Yes, yes, we absolutely do everything. Yeah, to make sure that, you know, that they have understood the brief and that they're executing properly. Yeah.
And then I understand that you also sometimes get involved in interiors. You just revamped the Caviar House in Piccadilly in London.
Yeah. yes, among other many other projects. Yeah, it's been really wonderful to develop that side as well, because we've found that, especially like you were saying before, you know, we have become a trusted source. And you know, at the beginning, somebody just orders a product, a designer might order a product, and then you move on to the next step, which is, oh, wait a second, you know, could you also, here's a mood board, could you, you know, put together a selection of things that you think might work here? And on our side, we think, okay, who are the best people for this job, you know, depending on their capabilities, their taste level, their execution style, etc. And then, you know, we move to the next step, which is, oh, well, maybe you can support us in the execution of this project. So at this point, we kind of do a variety of things. We do, obviously, procurement. We help with sort of larger scale projects. We do lots of hospitality. And we have developed these skills to really understand how, you know, what the needs, like, the fabrics have to be, you know, anti-inflammatory and so on and so forth. Like, there are a lot of technical skills that we have acquired, you know, along the way.
That's fantastic. What are you most proud of?
The fact that it's working. Yes. Yeah. I mean, for me, like, the commercial success is very, very tied to the mission. Meaning, if the mission is to help the design and artisan community, then that is the mission. You, like, you really need to make sure that you get the word out and that their products are properly seen, placed, and purchased. Otherwise, the cycle is not complete. So this, for me, it was very clear that it's not a vanity project. I'm really trying to affect the artisan community in a positive way. And so therefore, understanding the needs of the consumer on the other end is very critical. You know, like, tell me exactly what you need and we will endeavor to meet your needs. So elevate the product, you know, deliver on time, you know, all the things that are important.
And do most of these spaces have a retail arena as well? I mean, are they sold, some of these pieces sold in shops?
Very few, very few. About 75% of the artisans we work with are exclusively distributed online through Artemist. Some of them, you know, obviously some of the newer, the younger designers, because at this point there's sort of a combination of old world craft and new makers, and the newer design, the younger designers, or the ones that are a little more structured, have some real life distribution. But, you know, where we come in is really giving them a broader, you know, global point of view and window.
And do you think part of the success is because of our the current mood at the moment, which is for provenance, for sort of appreciating artistry? Do you think you've kind of hit a bit of a rich vein because of the mood, the current mood for interiors, of interiors?
Well, yes, I think so. During COVID, that there was definitely a boom. You know, all of a sudden people started looking at their environment differently, yeah. Their homes. And so, especially in the United States, where there's less of a culture of, you know, of nesting, I would say. But it's true. I mean, I feel that the message, you know, of communicating the ethos, the Italian ethos of fewer better things, it's an ongoing, you know, journey that we have to continue to work on, because young people especially have not totally absorbed that message. And so therefore there's, you know, in tandem, you have to present it like a you know, basically, you're a purveyor of furniture and beautiful things. And at the same time, you have to explain why, you know, like why the prices are higher, what the intrinsic value. And so this is one of the reasons that it was important for me to actually show the artisans very front and center. Like, this is not just some item that was produced in some anonymous place. Like, here's Giuseppe. He made it for you. He's, you know, and there's a story behind it. And here it is. So that you can start to, you know, understand a little bit more about the fact that, you know.
So you sell to trade. Do you sell to retail as well?
No, not really. We sell to end consumers because the website is essentially a retail store.
Yeah.
We've decided that wasn't really the route we wanted to go in. We do have a gallery in New York, and the purpose of the gallery is to have a physical place where people can come and experience, you know, the product or some vision of the product. But the idea is mainly to go direct to consumer and to the trade.
And so where are you living now? Do you still live in Florence?
No, I live in New York, but you know, it's hard to say. I'm on a plane most of the time.
I was going to say, what is your kind of day to day? Is it mostly, you know, do you have now somebody else looking for the new artisans?
Yes. At this point, it's very structured. We have about 65 people in the office in Milano. And so it is, you know, it's a fairly large operation. And so we have a procurement side and then a very large customer service side that, you know, it goes both ways, meaning we serve our constituents and then we serve the customer.
And it's a horrible question, but do you have a favorite area of craft, whether it's leather or wood or glass or?
You know, it's so interesting for me as a craft person. I thought for sure I am going to default to ceramics, you know, like I love hand decorated plates. I love glass, you know, Murano is like, you know, a sort of a dream come true. And then as I was traveling around and I was thinking, oh, okay, now I'm going to see someone who makes brass handles, you know, for door handles. Not as interesting. And then you go visit them and you're like, oh my God, this is so beautiful. I should drop everything and learn how to do this. So, you know, all these craft people are tied together by this like insane, passionate obsession for what they do that is so contagious. And it just, and everything is fascinating, you know, like the materials are fascinating, the processes are fascinating, the degree of passionate intensity with which they, you know, go at it. And I, you know, it's kind of monastic, you know, they're a certain kind of person, because it takes that level of intensity to spend 20 years of your life actually learning how to do something and then sustaining that, you know, for the rest of your life, which is, you know, it's, you know, when they say, oh, artisans are crazy, they're a crazy lot. Well, there's a reason, yeah. You know, because this is what they've been doing, you know.
Well, crikey, I mean, you and Marco must have been like sort of angels fluttering through the door for some of these people, because, you know, it's very hard to be, you know, brilliantly skillful at creating something. But golly, you have to have a business head as well in order to get it out there to, you know, to sell it, don't you?
Yeah. And, you know, Marco is a genius in that department, you know, and we're very well matched in the sense that I had sort of the craft area covered and he developed entirely from scratch this entire sort of tech and distribution system, because of course there's a huge logistics component to it as well. So just getting all that puzzle figured out was you know, was a big job. And then has evolved, of course, you know, as the world has evolved, as the online world has become extremely complex. And you would think that the artisans would have been more responsive, like, or would have understood it more readily. Now, of course, they do, you know, like now that everything exists and you can see it and you understand exactly what the opportunity is. But, some were more responsive than others initially. But, the thing is that you're on a mission, so you can't be, sort of personally, upset if somebody doesn't, pull out the red carpet. Which is what I was expecting. I kind of thought it's like, oh my God, they probably are going to be thrilled, And then, of course, they're artisans. And so their attitude is like, I'm either working or I'm talking to you. Yeah. So if I'm talking to you, I'm not working. So, make it short.
Wow.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Absolutely love it. Ippolita, thank you so much. It's been completely fascinating. And the problem is, I know that if I go online, I'm just going to want to buy everything.
that's what we're counting on.
Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for joining me today. You can hear more House Guest on British Airways In-Flight Entertainment in the audio section. You can follow me on Instagram at Carol W. Annett.